We're doing our class in Parsha. It is Parsha's Bo. Moshe is called to Paro. Hashem tells him, there's going to be this terrible plague that's going to destroy everything. It's called the plague of locusts. Pharaoh, his servants tell him, don't you realize all of Egypt's going to be destroyed? So after he's kicked Moshe out of his palace, he calls him back and asks him, okay, who do you want to go? Moshe says, everyone, kids, elders, children, everyone's gone, cattle. So he says, come on, what do you need kids for? You're saying you're going to serve Hashem. You guys are trying to con me. I know you want to run free. No, let the men go. That's what you're asking for. Get out of here. And he kicks them out of the palace. And so the plague of locusts comes. And you have tremendous winds for a day. And then tremendous locusts come and destroy everything. So no vegetation is left. Even if whatever was left from the hail gets consumed by the locusts. And Paro rushes to Moshe and Aaron and says, this time I sinned against Hashem and you. Please forgive me this time. Please pray to Hashem. This is death, what's happened here. Let him remove all this from upon me. So right away Moshe goes out to pray, and a new wind comes and takes out all the locusts from Egypt. And again, this time Hashem hardens Paro's heart, and he does not send the Jews. And as we've seen in the series leading up to this, the series of plagues were always two plagues Pharaoh was forewarned, and then the third just hit. Another two plagues he was forewarned, and the third hit. And again, now we've had two plagues. Pharaoh was forewarned, and now the ninth plague of darkness, without warning, darkness settles on Egypt. And there's such a strong darkness for 3 days where people wouldn't be able to move for 3 days. The Jews, they have light. So Pharaoh summons Moshe, and he says, go! Just leave your cattle. You can even take the kids. And Moshe says, no, not only am I taking the cattle, you're going to give us sacrifices. And we're not leaving anything behind. We're going to serve Hashem. And Hashem hardens his heart. And Pharaoh says, get out of here. And don't you dare come to me again, because the day you see me, you're going to die. And Moshe says, you're right. I'm not coming back to you. Which is another way of saying, don't worry. Next time you're coming to me.
Don't call me.
And Moshe is told by Hashem, tell them there's one more plague coming, the plague of the firstborn. And so Moshe tells Pharaoh, I'm leaving, but God has said to tell you that at midnight, Hashem is going to come out in Egypt, and the firstborn will die, from your firstborn down to the firstborn of the maids, down to the firstborn of the animals. All of Egypt will go wailing. You've never heard a wail like this before. The Jews will have peace. No one will dare yell at them, not even an animal. And you will see that Hashem has separated between Egypt and the Jews. And then your servants will come bowing to me and telling me, leave, take the nation. That's when I'm going to leave. And with that, Moshe turns and leaves Pharaoh. And Moshe is being respectful to Pharaoh, because what he really means to say is, you, Pharaoh, will come begging. And Hashem tells Moshe, don't worry, he's not going to listen. So we now begin the Torah, meaning now the Torah actually begins with mitzvos. It seems the purpose of the Torah was to tell us how to lead our lives. And there's a basic question, why did the Torah begin with all the stories of Genesis, of Bereishis, leading up to this point where the Torah gives us our first mitzvah? So that's been addressed already in the book of Bereishis. So Hashem tells Moshe, what's our first mitzvah? The mitzvah of time. What does a servant not have? He does not have control of his time. Our first mitzvah is to set up our own calendar. The Egyptian priests ruled Egypt because they controlled the calendar. Now Hashem tells Moshe the secrets of how to establish a Jewish calendar, a calendar which is, on the one hand, a lunar calendar, and on the other hand, we interject leap years in order to maintain our calendar in sync with the solar cycle. And the Jews are commanded to sanctify the month and to establish their calendar. Next, the Jews are commanded, yes, to take a sheep on the 10th of the month of Nisan and watch over the sheep for 4 days until they slaughter it on the 14th. All the Jewish people in the afternoon, and then they take from the blood and they put it on the doorposts and on the top of the doorposts and the houses where they'll eat it. And that night, they will roast it whole. Together with maror, don't eat it raw, don't eat it cooked. You must roast it whole with its feet and its innards, and you must eat all of it that night, no leaving anything over to the morning. And you eat it prepared to leave your houses. You're going to run out of Egypt. and I'm going to pass that night through Egypt, and I will kill all the firstborns of Egypt, human and animal firstborns, and I will punish all the idols of Egypt. And the blood will be a sign on your homes. I will see the sign, I will see the blood, and I will be poseach, I will be pesach over your homes. What does the word pesach mean? It means I will squat down, so to speak. I will have mercy over your homes. The word pesach means to have mercy. The word pesach means to have mercy. I will be poseach ufasachti alechem. I will have mercy over you. So the holiday, the first holiday where the Jewish people became a people, is the holiday of Pesach, the holiday of mercy. And the, you guys think I'm making it up? Look at the Targum, look at Rashi. That's what the word poseach means. The word poseach means to have mercy. Yes. That's what Pesach means, the holiday of mercy. You guys are looking at me like I came from Mars. Look at the Targum. Look at Rashi. Targum says, V'achus aleichon. I will have mercy. I will have compassion over you. Rashi says, U'fasachti v'chamalti. I will have compassion. Okay? Rashi continues and brings another pshat. I will skip over. I will pass over. But that's the second pshat. That's not the prime pshat of Rashi and the Targum. Okay. I will not allow you to be hit on this day. And you will celebrate this day for generations. 7 days you will eat matzah. You will get rid of any leaven, any chametz. No one may eat chametz for 7 days. You'll have a holiday of Pesach. The first day you'll celebrate. The last day you'll celebrate. And you'll watch the matzos. Because on this day, the armies of Israel left Egypt. You'll commemorate this day. For 7 days, no leaven in your house. So Moshe calls the Jews and they do it. They all take their sheep. And they're told that this is going to be for generations. And their children are going to ask them about this. And they're going to tell them, once upon a time we were in Egypt. And that's what happens. So Hashem hits the firstborns. And Pharaoh comes in the middle of the night. And he tells Moshe and Aaron, get out of here. Take everything you want. And they try to rush the Jews to get out. And the Jews take that dough, which they were making into matzahs. And they're leaving Egypt. So that's our parsha in a nutshell. Now let's review it. And there's a lot to talk about here. Yeah?
Well, when you get to, I have questions, but when you get to it, I'll ask.
Okay. So Hashem has hardened Paro's heart. We did not have opportunity to learn last week's parsha. We had a wedding Monday night. So this whole concept of Hashem hardening Pharaoh's heart has multiple interpretations. One understanding is that Hashem hardened his heart because when Hashem gives us free will, that's free will to act until we deserve to be punished. Obviously, when it's time to be punished, then the free will is irrelevant. Once a person has transgressed enough, then the time comes to be punished. And so sometimes part of the punishment is that Hashem says, I'm not going to let you turn back. You know, you'll see as a parent. You come and you tell your kid, don't do that again. And he says, fine. And then he does it again a second later. And you say, don't do that again. And then he says, fine. And he does it again a second later. And you say, look, I'm warning you, you don't do that again. You know, he's pulling his sister's pigtails. And he says, sure, Dad, I feel really bad. I'm not going to do it again. And he thinks you're turning away, and he grabs and he yanks her pigtails. And then you get up and you say, I told you not to do it again. He says, I'm so sorry, Dad, really, I'm sorry, right? Come on, wait a second. I warned you 3 times. Now it's the time where you're not going to be able to say I'm sorry anymore. That's it. Now you're going to pay for your actions. But the kid says, I'm really sorry, Dad. I really do. I'm really sorry. Right? So imagine you give him a 4th chance. And as you sit down, you see him yanking her pigtails. And he tells you, you see? Now what are you going to do when he says, I'm really sorry? So there comes a point where the punishment is, I'm not going to listen when you say you're sorry. So Hashem says, I'm not going to let you say you're sorry. I'm not going to let you change your mind. That's one understanding. The second understanding is that ordinarily a person would say, you know, if I'm suffering, I better say I'm sorry even if I don't mean it. And that's where Hashem hardened Paro's heart. Meaning Paro should have logically said, I give in, Ribbono Shel'Olam, I see you're stronger, whatever you want, okay? You can go. I respect you, do what you want. That's where Hashem hardened his heart. If Pharaoh would have said, honestly, I understand, Hashem, you're running the show, and so I'm going to do whatever you want, that he could have done at any time. When Hashem hardened his heart, he hardened his heart from reaching that logical conclusion. from saying, even though I don't believe in you, it's in my interest to say I do, just get out. That he was not able to do. What he was able to do was to actually do tshuva. There Hashem didn't get involved. Hashem hardened his heart in the realm of self-preservation. Logic would have dictated that in the name of self-preservation, Pharaoh should have just said, go! We're destroying all of Egypt. Go! That he couldn't do. What he was able to do was to do real tshuva. Hashem hardened his heart so that he wouldn't do that act of self-preservation. Let the Jews go in the name of self-preservation. Yes?
What would he do if he didn't have a fear of self-preservation? Like the reason why normal people do tshuva because of self-preservation. They want to live their longer life, healthier life.
Right, but sometimes a person says, this is the truth.
Right, but why would he come to this conclusion if nothing, no Eastern happened to him?
But he's watching, he sees how everything he believed in is going down the tubes. You know, he believed the Nile was God. The Nile is run by Hashem, turns to blood. They believed the frogs were gods of fertility. Suddenly Hashem runs the frogs. He believes that his sorcerers have powers. Suddenly Hashem brings a plague they can't replicate. You know, everything he could have believed in was logically refuted. So now what? He says, maybe Moshe's playing tricks on me. So he tells Moshe, make the plague go away tomorrow. He thinks Moshe can do it in a second. He knows, Moshe must know scientifically that the plague is about to end. That's why Moshe came to me and said, when do you want the plague to end? So Pharaoh says, tomorrow. Moshe says, fine, tomorrow. You want another day of suffering? Fine, tomorrow the plague will end. He goes out and asks Hashem, please have the plague end tomorrow. Every angle was proven to him. Okay, but that Pharaoh didn't want to do because that meant leaving his arrogance. Pharaoh said, Li yoriv ani asitini. Pharaoh said, I am a self-made man. Literally. I made myself. Pharaoh propagated this belief among the Egyptians. He said, I don't go to the bathroom because I do not come from the way other human beings come from. I made myself. Li yoriv ani asitini. I don't know where his parents were. I don't know where he came from. But that's what he told people. And you have to imagine this little midget who was one amma tall. He had a long beard down to the floor. This little midget who is a top sorcerer and very, very smart, you know, and he's taken the throne here in Egypt, and he's very smart. He speaks 69 languages. He's a very, very smart person, and nonetheless...
He didn't speak Hebrew. He must have been in
okay.
school.
Okay. So Hashem says part of the plan here is that I will make these miracles. You'll tell your children over. So part of what we have to do is at the Seder night, we tell the kids the story of the plagues, not only that we left Egypt. Yeah?
Why does Hashem say,
I don't know. And when you find an answer, please tell me. I don't know why it says bo and not lech. I don't know.
Maybe it's a contrasting like as you said before, like that Pharaoh was a self-made man, like, as if he was God. So God's not going to worry.
I don't know. I don't remember seeing an answer. You remember once hearing an answer, and I don't remember hearing an answer as to why it says bo and not lech. I don't know. And when you find the answer, please remember me and tell me. So Moshe and Aaron come to Pharaoh. Remember, Moshe speaks and it's unintelligible. It's his brother Aaron that interprets it all to Pharaoh. And if they warn him, locusts are going to come. Now, they've just been hit by hail. And he tells them, look, whatever's left from the hail is going to be destroyed by the locust. Now, they know what locust is like. Everyone knew locust is destructive, and everyone knew that there's no fending off the locust. Now, God has shown them that he could cause their cattle to die, and God has shown them that he could bring wild animals that they can't stand up against. You know, the Egyptian would run into the house, lock the door, and one of the animals Hashem sent into Egypt was an animal that had very long hands, and they would stick in their hands through the chimney, come in through the door, open the front door, open the locks, and then the other animals would come charging in. So they see that there's something going on here. Hashem's in control. And they're warned, everything's going to be filled with locusts. You've never seen something like this. And the servants all tell Pharaoh, you know, why don't you give in? Don't you realize Egypt's lost? So Moshe and Aaron are summoned, and Pharaoh asks them, who's going? And Moshe says, everyone. And Pharaoh says, you know, I see through my stargazers, there's a star called Ra'ah. And that star represents bloodshed. You guys are going to go into the desert and you're going to be killed. Look, let me show you in the stars. Moshe, you understand stars? Look, Ra'ah is out there. And Pharaoh was right. Technically, what the stars showed was that when we would do the golden calf, that the people were supposed to be annihilated. And that's why when Hashem was so upset at the Jewish people, Moshe argued and said, "Lama yomru Mitzrayim lemo? Why should the Egyptians say, what's the next word? Bera'ah. This word, ra'ah. Hotziam, be'eretz Mitzrayim. The Egyptians are going to say, you see, we warned them that the star ra'ah, evil, harm, was in their way. So Moshe tells Hashem, if you punish the Jews now, the Egyptians will say, that's the star we warned them about. You can't do that. It's a desecration of your name. So Pharaoh says, you want to serve Hashem, you don't need kids. Go, and he kicks them out, which is a very interesting concept because we do bring kids. Kids are supposed to be in shul. We have a mitzvah of chinuch. In our book, kids are a part of it. When we bring a paschal offering, we give the kids to eat. They have a mitzvah to eat. Kids have a mitzvah to hear kiddush. Right, in our book, in Judaism, kids are an active part of Judaism. On the contrary, we have a mitzvah on the Seder night, v'igadta levincha, tell the kid. The mitzvah on the Seder is to tell the kids the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. But Pharaoh says, you want to serve God, what do the kids have to do with it? The kids don't have to go, only the adults. Here we see a very different different orientation. Yes?
What is the timeline of the
seven? It's an excellent question. One opinion says that each makkah took a month. Another opinion says that he was warned for 3 weeks, and then there was 1 week of the plague. And the Mishnah in Eduyos says that the 10 plagues took 12 months. So the Mishnah seems to say that each plague with its warning period took a little over a month, because you had 5 plagues in 6 months, 10 plagues in 12 months. So that gives each plague a little bit more, unless there were one or two exceptional plagues that took a little bit longer. Every plague took a month with the warning plus the plague, and then you had 2 plagues that took longer.
Was there something
on the project of
3 days?
Yes, we mentioned that. The Pasuk mentions that. Yes.
So it wasn't a month.
Okay. We said that it could be the month was the plague plus the warning. Okay? So Hashem tells Moshe to extend his hand and the locust will come. So he does that. And it's worth noting that the Pasuk says there were winds that brought in the plague. They didn't come out of thin air. We have a rule that Hashem doesn't do yesh me'ayin. Once Hashem created the world, Hashem works within nature to do his miracles. So,
Egypt.
It's a good question. Do we say that all miracles work within nature? So the Rabbag wrote a work called Milchamot Hashem, in which he was the proponent of this concept. This concept is first elucidated upon by Maimonides in his commentary on Mishnah and the Mishnah in Pirkei Avot, which discusses the 10 things that were created in twilight. Ralbag took this concept even further in his work, Milchamot Hashem, and then in his commentary on Tanakh, where he tries to explain every miracle, how it worked within nature, and the other commentaries did not agree with him. They said that he took it too far. There are those miracles where, as Maimonides explains, the miracle is the timing. There's a natural explanation as to how Hashem did it, because Hashem works through nature. But even if you could understand the comets that went by and the formation of the stars which caused the seas to split and the winds that caused the seas to split at Kriyat Yamsuf, the miracle is that when Hashem tells Moshe to extend his staff, the sea splits and the Jews cross, and when the Egyptians are in it, the sea comes crashing down. The fact that Hashem works through nature does not contradict the miracle. So that's the concept which the Rambam begins, and the Ralbag took it even further. The Ralbag was very heavily opposed for the extent to which he took it. And the Rambam, so That's also arguable, how far we take that. How much do we say Hashem works within nature? How much is nature a real part of Hashem's workings? So that's a discussion among the commentaries. And even according to Rambam, we don't say that about everything. You know, the man comes falling out of heaven. How does that work? Why does food come out of heaven for 2 million people for 40 years? And it doesn't happen before and it doesn't happen afterwards. You have enough food for 2 million people wherever they go. And on Shabbos, it doesn't. Every day of the week, a certain amount comes down. On Friday, a double portion comes down. On Shabbos, nothing. What's the nature in that? For 40 years. Meaning, you tell me it happened for a week. Okay, maybe. I can find a rationalization for that. So that's why even the Rambam doesn't go with this fully. Meaning, the Rambam also agrees that some things are miraculous. But again, the Rabag took the Rambam's concept and took it a step further. Yes.
I was going to say that. I think Eben Ezra talks about with the last week's parsha, right, using the word Hashem as opposed to Kel Shaddai. He explains one of the differences is God is Rashi says God's criticizing Moshe or Eben Ezra's not criticizing; he's really trying to encourage him. He's saying, close, for example, to Avos, everything he did, right, for example, the miracle with Abram fights kings, right, that's, it's miraculous, not just, but it was natural, the war, he won, maybe they've been arms, or, but with Moshe, you're going to see, not that war, it's going to be a miraculous thing, totally beyond nature, there's nothing really natural about it, really uses the Hashem's name.
Okay.
Which is different.
Yefim. So Pharaoh summons in Moshe and he says, this time I sinned this time. Please pray to Hashem, your God. And there are two opinions. Whenever it says Hashem, your God, is that a person saying, I'm not in on it yet? Or is it a sign of respect? When a person is representative, as he represents Hashem in his behavior, you say Hashem is his God. Okay, again, the Torah points out the wind that takes away the locust, and Hashem hardens Paro's heart, and we have the plague of darkness. Our sages say during the plague of darkness, what happened? So, number one, sometimes we've had here in Israel where a terrorist wanted to infiltrate a Jew's home. So what they do is they knock down the electric. Some people have the electric box outside the house. So there was an interesting story where a terrorist came to a Jew's house and he knocked down the electric and then he went and stood with his knife by the front door. The Jew knew the electric box was on the side of the house, so he went out the back porch, flipped up the electric, went back into the house. He's in the house and a second later the Arab sees that all the electric went back on So the Arab goes back to the electric box and turns down the fuse again and again, runs and stands by the front door to kill the Jew when he comes out the door. And this time the guy goes to turn on the fuse and he figures out something's funny. Why did everything jump suddenly? And he looks around the house and he sees the Arab there and standing with a knife ready for him. The Arab is focused on the front door. The Jew went out the back door. So he went back in, got his gun, and let's just say that the Arab didn't kill the Jew. Why am I saying that? Because firstly, you should know practically that when the electric jumps, you have to be concerned, hey, here in Israel, I don't know why, but very often the electric box is outside the house. Don't run out to turn on the fuse without looking, making sure you know what's going on outside the house. Secondly, when we have blackouts, so there's the famous New York City blackout, and a lot of crime happened then. When there's a blackout, so people know you can't call the cops and the cops can't see what's going on. So it's a dangerous time in some places. So here you have a city that's been persecuting the Jews for years. They've been so cruel to the Jews. And now, over the last 11 months, God has shown that he is on the Jews' side. And you have a blackout throughout Egypt. And the Egyptians can't move. And the Jews have light. And so the Jews start walking around Egypt, and they see the Egyptians frozen. The Egyptians can't do a thing. And to the Jew, it's a normal daylight. Wherever they go, they have light. So Hashem sends Moshe and he tells the Jewish people, Hashem asked you to borrow from the Egyptians a lot of jewelry and borrow expensive things from them so that when you leave Egypt, you will be wealthy. So the Jews go into the Egyptians' home and they start looking around the Egyptians' homes. And they see all the wealth that the Egyptians have. They have this freebie. The Egyptians can't do anything, and the Jews can. But they don't take anything. They don't pocket anything. Now, while all of this is happening, a tremendous plague hits Egypt. And 8 million Jews die. 8 million Jews drop dead. So that this is the first time that the Jews are being hit worse than the Egyptians. Meaning until now, all the plagues hit the Egyptians and didn't hit the Jews. And now, the Egyptians seem to have it bad, right? They have darkness. But what do the Jews have? The Jews spend this time doing two things. They spend the time burying millions of Jews and taking a peek at where the Egyptians keep all their wealth hidden. So they go through all the Egyptians' houses. Every Jew went through the Egyptian who he knew went through his house. And the plague of darkness ends. And the Jews are left 1/5. 4 out of 5 Jews died. What happened? Why did those 4 out of 5 Jews have to die? Our sages tell us that 4 out of 5 Jews would not leave Egypt. Meaning, Hashem had tried to impress upon them with this process of the 9 plagues, to impress upon them that they have to leave, that they are a separate people, that they are not Egyptians, and that they don't belong there, and that Hashem is their God, and Hashem is there for them. And Hashem runs the world, and He wants to take them to a chosen land, to Israel. And you know what? Even after the 10 miraculous plagues, where the Egyptians could say, it's Hashem's finger at play here, there were 4 out of 5 Jews who said, I can't leave. This is where I'm going to stay. So the plagues are about to end. We're about to leave Egypt. The next plague is the end game, right? The next plague is Bechoros at midnight, and the next morning we leave. But we have a problem, because 4 out of 5 Jews are not ready to leave. So that teaches us a scary concept. You can have the greatest miracles telling you, go to Israel. And many people will find it very hard to get up and go. Come on, I'm used to climbing the Swiss Alps. Come on, I'm French. I'm used to drinking French wine. I'm used to the French culture. I'll tell you an interesting story. And at first glance, the story seems to be negative, but I think if you think about it, it's not such a bad story. We all come from different cultures. So some people come from a very organized culture. Americans, British, South Africans. Imagine you're on a plane and you're approaching Israel. And Israeli law is that the final half hour before landing, everyone should remain seated. So imagine you're on this plane and the stewardess comes on the mic and says, we're approaching the half hour mark in 5 minutes. Everyone will have to remain seated for the remainder of the flight, the final half hour, till we land. And then those 5 minutes pass. Imagine the stewardess comes on the speaker and says, we are now entering Israeli airspace, and within a half hour we will land, and everyone is requested to take their seats and fasten their seatbelts. No one is permitted to stand from this point onward. What does everyone in this room do? So, the average person here would sit down and fasten their seatbelts. But what if I told you that there are people who stand up when they hear that? What if I told you that there's a mentality that says, wait, I got to do one more thing. You know I'm supposed to be seated, but one more minute won't make a big difference. What would you say if I told you that these people don't mean bad? They're good, kind people, but it's part of a mentality. You would say they could have their mentality. I don't want to be the stewardess on their plane. I don't want to have to deal with them. But just because people have a different mentality doesn't mean they're bad. It might be more difficult for us to deal with them because we're not accustomed to their mentality. But that doesn't mean they're bad. We who make Aliyah have hardships because we look at behavior like that and we say, what's wrong with these people? But who said there's something wrong with them? Maybe these are the same people who would defy the rules in order to help someone else. Maybe these are the same people who think that there are values beyond rules that human beings make up. And that's why when human beings tell them what to do, they're not so quick to listen. And it could be a little bit annoying. But is it really a bad thing? Oh, it might be difficult. I'm not saying I recommend that behavior. But then you come to Israel and you notice and you say to yourself, how do I deal with these Israelis? So the first mistake is calling them these Israelis. But it's difficult. And you notice 4 out of 5 people, when they were faced with the challenge of changing, having a paradigm shift, I'm not supposed to stay in this country. I'm supposed to build a life elsewhere. I'm not supposed to remain in this pagan culture. I'm supposed to make a shift in my life. 4 out of 5 people said, I can't. They could, but they chose to say, I can't. That's a natural, responsible reaction. But it's a reaction that stunts growth and makes it impossible to be redeemed. You notice Hashem didn't say, let me do one more miracle for these Jews. Let me make the skies open and tell them, come on, they've seen fire and water mix. They've seen the impossible happen before their eyes. Our sages say, the pasuk says, Eish mitlakachat betoch habarad. It's not a midrash, it's a pasuk. There was fire burning within the hail. That's the pasuk. So you see that, and you're supposed to say, okay, Hashem, you're the boss, I'm going to do what you say. But you know what? 4 out of 5 people didn't say that. Not so easy, not so simple. And so 4 out of 5 people die. So when we approach the redemption from Egypt, the Jews are very scared of Hashem. They're not yet ready to love Hashem, but they're sure scared of Him because they've just seen a whole year of punishment. And here they see now that the average Jew lost most of his family. Think of it that way. The average person buried most of his siblings in Egypt. So you're coming towards redemption, and the people are approaching it with tremendous fear. And that's why when Moshe comes and tells them, go talk to the Egyptians, because you're going to be very wealthy. Ask them to borrow their jewelry and all their precious items. What do the Jews say? Moshe, we don't need promises. Don't talk to us about money. Just take us out today. Don't talk to us about being wealthy tomorrow. And Moshe says, no, believe me, it's going to happen. Just do it. Ask people to borrow their items. And so the Jews go to the Egyptians and say, hey, could I borrow this gold vessel and that silver vessel and that copper vessel which you have hidden there and in the other place? And the Egyptian stands there and his mouth is gaping and he's thinking, I beat this guy to a pulp. I was so cruel to him. And he knew where all my things were. Look, he's telling me where they are. And he didn't take it when we had a blackout. He could have taken it. How could I say no? So the Egyptians lend them. They lend them these items. Oh, so that was a court case that was brought in the days of the Roman Empire. Yes. Maybe we'll get to that Thursday night. Remind me. We'll discuss that. Yes.
2 questions. One is, didn't the Jews, the forfeit, the Jews who died, didn't they lose in a sense their free will to make the choice to go?
Why?
Maybe, who knows, maybe if they had seen Makat Zechorot.
Maybe. Maybe. But maybe there comes a point where Hashem's patience runs out.
Second is, I know that Rashi brings I think it was Rashi, right, that says the 4/5 died, the Chamushim. But the Pasuk at the end of Sheni says, L'chol b'nei Yisrael, v'yat or b'mishvotam. Does that contradict Rashi? Or not contradict?
I don't think so. Those that remained living.
What?
Those that remained living.
So the ones that passed away before, and then the ones, okay.
So, where does Rashi bring down the Chamushim?
Next week's parasha. So Hashem didn't want the Egyptians to know that the Jews were burying their dead. And Pharaoh tells them, get out of here. Watch out, because if I see you again, you're going to die. And this is a very interesting point. You see that Pharaoh was not really capable of killing Moshe, because Pharaoh's palace was very well guarded. He had lions sitting. And when Moshe and Aaron would walk in, the lions would roll before them like pups. And his own guards didn't dare come near Moshe and Aaron. So you have these old people, Moshe and Aaron, in their 80s, right? 80 and 83. And Moshe is this giant, you know, he's 20 feet tall, next to Pharaoh, who's this midget, who's all of 2 feet tall. You know, he's 10 times as tall as him. But okay, so Moshe speaks to him respectfully. And Moshe warns him, look, Hashem's going to destroy all the gods of Egypt.
But Moshe said he wasn't going to go see him again.
Right, so in their final conversation, Moshe tells him Hashem is going to destroy all the gods of Egypt.
But
you guys...
He already told them, didn't he?
No, we're reviewing the Parsha.
Okay,
so at this point, Moshe is going to tell him, I'm never going to see you again. I'm never coming back to you. But first Moshe tells him, you know, at midnight, when you guys believe that the Egyptian god of the sheep and the zodiac in the month of Nisan is most powerful in the 15th of the month, when the zodiac of the sheep is going all night long, it's running through the skies, and this is the night when you believe you are most powerful, at midnight, at the moment where you believe the Egyptian god is most powerful, Hashem will destroy all the gods of Egypt, starting with the firstborns, whom you guys worship your firstborn children, running through all the gods of Egypt, Hashem will punish them. And even your firstborn son, Pharaoh, who's supposed to take the throne after you, will drop dead. And everyone's going to be wailing throughout Mitzrayim. You've never been hit like this before. Notice how Hashem takes on the Egyptians. Hashem is saying, you know, ordinarily if you're going to fight someone, you don't tell them what you're about to do to them. And Hashem keeps forewarning the Egyptians. Hashem's saying, there's nothing you can do. You guys think you're so powerful. You're such great sorcerers. I'm going to tell you in advance what I'm doing. Let's say you stand up. You can't do anything. Hashem purposely contended with the most powerful and the most knowledgeable kingdom of the time. The Egyptians, who were known throughout the planet to be the epicenter of sorcery and black magic and every type of sleight of hand and every type of tapping into the forces of nature, they were masters of it all. And Hashem was purposely showing the world, here in this place, I will show you, on the night that they believe they are most powerful, I will bring them down to their knees. And you will recognize that Jews are not Egyptians, as even the Jews that are living amongst the Egyptians, no one's going to die. And then your servants will come begging for me to leave. And Moshe and Aaron leave with that warning. Now, Moshe is given the mitzvah of sanctifying the month. We'll come back to that in 1 minute. I just want to finish the point. What is this idea of the Jews and the sheep? So remember, until this day, even though the Jews are recognizing that they're supposed to serve Hashem, they still believe in the sheep. They've been brought up to believe that the sheep and the goat, they're godly figures. And when the Jews leave Egypt, they still have pieces of gold where on one side it says the Tetragrammaton, Yud-Kei, Vav-Kei, Hashem's name, and on the other side there's the figure of a calf. That's what they worship. So Moshe tells them, Mishchu, pull back your hand, stop worshiping that sheep. I want you to pull that sheep into your house. Tie it to your bedpost. For 4 days, your kids are going to be dealing with the sheep. Now, if you go in Egypt, if you go in Hodu, if you go in India till today, if a cow stops in the middle of the street, traffic has to stop. You don't dare move the cows. They're God, right? They believe the cows are godly creatures. So in Egypt, the same thing. You respect it as sheep. That's why Pharaoh tells Yaakov Avinu, you guys want to be shepherds, go to Goshen. We can't see you here in Egypt. We believe the sheep is a god. We don't believe you could shepherd a sheep, tell the sheep where to go. So now Moshe is telling the Jews, you have to change. Take that sheep, which you believe is God, take it and tie it to your bedpost. For 4 days, you're going to be telling your kids, I'm checking the sheep each day. And the kid is going to say, what are you doing, Dad? Why is the sheep tied to our bed? The kids are going to start pulling at its ears. And you're going to be checking the sheep every day. And the kid's going to ask you, Dad, what you doing? And you're going to say, I'm checking the sheep to make sure it doesn't have a blemish, because I'm going to slaughter it in honor of God in 4 days. Now, everyone's going to know about it. The Jews had to have such tremendous might, such willpower, to be able to come and take that creature, which they believed was a god, tie it to their bedpost,
Here the Egyptians could kill them. And Hashem tells them, I know you have one off day. It's Shabbos, right? On Shabbos, I want you to go out and take that sheep. The 10th of Nisan falls out on Shabbos. What could the Egyptians say? I gave you one day off. This is what you do with your day off. You take my God to slaughter it. But the Jews had this tremendous courage and belief in Hashem. And they all go out and they take a sheep and they bring it into their house and they tie it to the bedpost. Now they're believing the sheep is not God. They have 4 days to live with that sheep at their bedpost. You know what it means waking up in the morning to the thing looking in your face? Now that thing could kill you. Or at least that's what they believed until today. Moshe tells them, Mishchu, pull back from believing that. The sheep can do nothing to you. You're going to slaughter that sheep. They have 4 days to connect with the concept. And then on that fourth day, in the middle of the day, when everyone can see, they're going to slaughter it. And then they're going to take it, and they can't hide it at home like cook it in a pot. No, they're going to roast it. So all of Egypt smells that the Jews are roasting their God. What are the Egyptians going to do? There can be a mass pogrom out there. Who knows? And Hashem tells them, you're not allowed to prepare yourself for war. You can't get together and be prepared. Every Jew in his house with his family. So no one knows what's happening in the next house. Imagine you're in the house all alone. Outside your door, every Jew's door, was the blood of the Egyptian gods that you just slaughtered. Inside the house, there's a fresh roast. You're roasting their God. If the Egyptians want to have a mass pogrom, all they have to do is walk around Egypt, look for each house which has blood on the doorpost. Come on, they make a cartoon of Muhammad, they're ready to kill him. Here they slaughtered their God. They put the blood on the doorpost. Is there anything more blatant than that? On which day? On the day where everyone believed the Egyptian God was most powerful. The 15th of the month of the sheep in the zodiac. Everyone believed. The Jews also believed it until this point. Hashem tells them, you guys have to be courageous. Till now I did everything. Till now I did all the miracles. Now you guys have to do something. We're going to do the great miracle of taking you out of Egypt. Here's your role in it. So the Jews have two tremendous mitzvos. Mitzvah number one, they're all going to circumcise. Ribbono shel Olam, what do you want me to do? I want you to circumcise. So all the Jews have to do this tremendous operation. Go ask any adult that has a circumcision. And the way we do it today is small fry compared to how they used to do it then. Today we stitch them up. Today we cauterize all the bleeding. Today we can sew up the veins that are bleeding. You know what it means to have a circumcision? What swelling, what bleeding, how painful it was back then. So let's say they had Arak, right? But they were circumcising. They were slicing off one of the most sensitive parts of the human body. And they didn't have the professionals we have today to deal with everything. No, they didn't have me. I wasn't there. Well, maybe I was. Who knows? And then they're commanded to take the Egyptian god, who they believed in until now, slaughter it midday, take the blood and put it on the doorpost where everyone can see it outside the house, and then go into the house and roast it whole where you cannot hide the evidence. So the Jews do it. And be prepared for a mass exodus from Egypt. What are the Egyptians going to think? You think the Egyptians didn't know they're slaughtering their gods? They knew everything the Jews were doing. You think the Egyptians didn't know on this night the Jews are ready to leave in mass? So what would logic dictate? What are the Egyptians supposed to do tonight? Pick up their clubs, go out like Morsi's policemen, start beating up and killing a few Jewish families, and then let the Jews know that they're not leaving tonight. The Jews are sitting at home trembling. They're all wrapped, ready to leave Egypt. On the day they're about to slaughter the sheep, well, let's go back 4 days earlier. It's Shabbos. Hashem told them, go take the sheep. So the Jews each take a sheep, and they start heading home. And every Jew meets one Egyptian at least who says to him, what are you doing? And the Jew says, I'm taking a sheep home. And the Egyptian says, what are you going to do with it? And the Jew says, Hashem told me to slaughter it. And now the Jew has to wonder, is this guy going to kill me? What courage to say that. Can you imagine looking a Nazi in the face and saying, I'm here with the picture of Hitler crumpled up in my hand because I'm going to burn it. Who would have the courage to look him in the eye and say, God told me to burn this, I'm going to burn it. And every Jew had to do that. And so we celebrate that Shabbos, Shabbat HaGadol, the Shabbat of the great miracle where the Egyptian would look at the Jew and say, good luck, Have a great day. It's nice meeting you today. Their reaction was unnatural. The Jews had no way to anticipate that's what would happen. And they lived up to the challenge. So the Jews come home and they slaughter the Paschal offering and they put the blood on the doorposts. And they sit down in groups, every family in their own house. They're ready to leave Egypt and they're scared out of their wits. And then midnight comes. And they hear wailing all over Egypt. All they hear is wailing. Because everyone's finding people dead in their house. But something else happened. Why is it called Makat Bechorot? The Midrash says that the firstborn put together a pack. You know, you have a pack and half pack. So you had the pack of the firstborns. They got together and they went to Pharaoh and they said, wait a second, let them go. Pharaoh said, no. They said, we're all going to die. Pharaoh said, I'm not letting the Jews go. And so the firstborns, who had a very important role in Egypt, they were considered a god, they put together an army. And they came to Pharaoh and they said, we want the Jews free. And Pharaoh sent his men out and civil war erupted. So on the eve of Pesach, as the Jews are slaughtering the Egyptian god, Egypt is in turmoil. There's fighting throughout the streets. The firstborns are fighting the rest of the Egyptians. What the firstborns did not realize was that most women in Egypt were cheating on their husbands. And when Hashem was going to kill the firstborns, Hashem was going to say, I'm going to be machmir. I'm going to be more stringent here. And if it was the first child the woman had, if this was the first kid the father had, any way you could figure that this was a first child, they dropped dead. So the Egyptians were all thinking that it was their firstborn children that were going to die. And suddenly their third child died. Why? Because the third child wasn't from this father. It was from another guy. It was from the neighbor. And for the neighbor, this was the first kid he had. So you had all around Egypt, people were dropping like flies and no one could figure out why. So it wasn't only the firstborn. It was also firstborn by other calculations. And so everywhere people were crying. And the Jews are sitting at home and they have no idea what's going on. Is my neighbor alive? Have they made a mass pogrom? Are they killing every other Jew in town? Now don't forget, this is after the plague of darkness, where 8 million Jews did die. So Hashem is clearly showing the Jewish people, hey, I'm telling you what to do, and I'm telling you you're going to leave, and I'm not going to tell you all the shots before I play them. Hashem did not tell them, hey, buddies, you're going to die. Every one of you is going to lose 4 out of 5 family members. Hashem didn't tell them this in advance. So here they are at home, scared and prepared. On the one hand, they believe. Here they've seen Hashem runs the show. On the other hand, it's very scary to be locked in a house, not knowing what's going on outside. And so they spend the night praying. And corresponding to that, every night in our evening prayer, we say Hashkiveinu. We say, Hashem, let us go to sleep in peace. Let us wake up in peace. Let evil things stay far away from us. Let our lives pass on in tranquility. And so the Jews stand up to this amazing test. And as they're slaughtering their Paschal offering, the average Jew has not yet healed from their circumcision. They are still bleeding. And so when they come to dip the grass in the blood, they're taking from the blood of the sheep, which actually has mixed into it their own blood, which is still dripping. Which is a phenomenal idea that the Jews are leaving Egypt and they're all wounded. All the Jewish males were wounded now. So that's why we say, va'evor alayich va'erech mitboseset bedamayich, va'omar lach bedamayich chayi, va'omar lach bedamayich chayi. We say it at every circumcision. Hashem said about the Jewish people as they left Egypt, through your blood you live. So the simple understanding is, even though our history has been very bloody, we've suffered many pogroms, much persecution. Nonetheless, through all that, we live. Our sages say it's referencing these two bloods, the blood of the Paschal offering and the blood of the circumcision. So Hashem tells them, your kids are going to ask you about this, and you have a mitzvah to answer them. And here Hashem reveals to them, there's going to be a future, and the future is going to look back at this. And you're going to have children who will deny any of this happened. There will be a generation which will look back and say, why are you guys bothering with all this? But that's a beautiful message to the Jewish people. There's a future. There's going to be a future generation. So the nation bows out of appreciation. It's interesting. The mitzvah is you're not allowed to break a bone in the sheep. The sheep has to remain whole. sheep ordinarily give birth in the month of Adar. Now, a sheep is only kosher for the Paschal offering up to a year old. It has to be within a year. So that effectively means that a sheep would be somewhere in the range of 1 month old. Because by next year, Adar, the sheep is 1 year old. And by Nisan, the sheep is disqualified because it's a year and a month. So the sheep were very small sheep, the sheep that they brought for a Paschal offering. Everyone would get a little piece, but it was very small sheep. They were 1 month old, and their bones were very brittle. You had to actually be very careful when you brought a Paschal offering to ensure not to break a bone, because the sheep were very young, and so their bones were very brittle. after that year, we never again put the blood on the doorpost. So it was a one-time thing. Yes?
My understanding as a kid from the Prince of Egypt was that the Jews lived in Goshen, and then the Egyptians lived in Mitzrayim. But if that's the case, the Parsha seems to say that we should put the blood on the door so that God can distinguish between the houses, and that we live in their midst. So, where do we live during this time?
So, there's a pasuk that says, "Rak be'esh eretz Goshen asher sham b'nei Israel lo hikah barad." So, the pasuk clearly says that even in this time, the Jews were living in Goshen. But the pasuk does not say that there were no Jews living out of Goshen. There were clearly a huge Jewish population in Goshen. Goshen was owned by the Jews when Sarah was abducted by Pharaoh. And then Pharaoh realized he has to let her go, that Hashem was punishing him. So then he gave her a gift, the land of Goshen. So it was Jewish owned. It was Jewish property. But there were also Jews living already in other parts of Egypt. Yeah. It doesn't say that Hashem looked at the blood as a sign. I'll see the blood, so I'll know this is a Jewish home. It says Hashem sees the blood and sees that we did the mitzvos, and then we have the merits, not to be hit by this plague. Because as we said, Hashem works through nature. And so when a firstborn child is born, they have to contend with a womb that's never had a child yet. And the whole canal that's never had a child yet. And so that takes out something out of a firstborn. So when Hashem hits Egypt the way we say Hashem usually hits Egypt. And the way Hashem does things in the world, some way through nature. There was obviously some kind of plague that would only hit firstborns. Now, if we're saying Hashem is killing the firstborns in Egypt because Hashem, it's part of destroying all the gods of Egypt, well, the firstborn Jews were also part of the gods of Egypt. They were also worshipped. We said the Jews were serving idols just like the Egyptians. So Hashem saying, I'm going to come down to Egypt and destroy all the gods of Egypt, including the firstborns. Logic would dictate that the Jewish firstborns should also die. That's why Hashem says, I'll see you kept my mitzvah. I told you to do something very scary, to put the blood of the Egyptian god on this night, the night of the 15th, on the outside of the doors. I'll see you did that mitzvah, and I will have mercy over you, because really the Jews did deserve to be punished just like the Egyptians. One of the seven Noahide laws is you cannot be a pagan. And the Jews were worshipping the firstborn. That's why Hashem says, I'll have compassion over you, I'll protect you. Because otherwise you have to wonder, why does Hashem have to pass over our houses? What did we do wrong? Why do we deserve to get the plague? So here Hashem tells us a rule. Kivan shenitnan reshut lamachshit. Once Hashem gives permission for destructiveness to represent itself in the world, so then Hashem gives it in mass. There isn't this idea where everyone gets their own ruling. If a bomb goes off, there can be this concept where a lot of people will die, and Hashem won't go into does he deserve it and does he deserve it. Once Hashem gives permission for destruction to become present in the world, it does not discern between the pious and non-pious. Again, when there's mass destruction. So there's going to be a mass plague here. You have to be a very big tzaddik to merit this special hashgacha pratit when there's a mass plague that you should be singled out. Okay. We have a mitzvah to eat matzah, right? Matzah was the bread we ate in Egypt all the years we were enslaved there. Matzah also represented the fact that we were rushed out of Egypt and we couldn't bake our bread. we have a mitzvah, ushmartem et ha-matzot, watch the matzahs. Yo, you have to watch any mitzvah. What does it mean, watch the matzahs? It means you have to give it extra watching, more than you would any other mitzvah. And that we will discuss, Be'ezrat Hashem, in a few weeks, how you watch the matzah from the time you harvest the wheat. You're careful that no water comes onto it. You're extra careful, more so than other mitzvot. Also, when we watch the matzahs, we do it l'shem matzot mitzvah. We do it for the sake of the mitzvah of matzah. We don't just make matzah. Even as we grind the wheat, we say we're doing this for the sake of the mitzvah. So that's why the Torah stresses Ushmaltem et ha-matzot. As sages say, Ushmaltem et ha-matzot means Ushmaltem et ha-mitzvot. We have a mitzvah to watch all the mitzvos. The Torah tells us, our children will ask us, what you guys doing? What's all this hard work? So part of the education we have to give children is that it is a merit to keep the mitzvos. It's very easy to give them the feeling, it's difficult to be a Jew. A person can inadvertently give that message, and that is most destructive. We see the problem with the wicked son is that he looks at all of Torah observance as a toil. It's difficult. And that's where we have to convey how beautiful, how precious it is. That's the spirit of the mitzvos is sometimes more important than the mitzvos when it comes to educating the children. We want to develop a love for Torah. You ask, what should I learn with my children? Learn things that will develop their love of Torah. Let them enjoy Torah. Learn the stories of Torah. If you can develop their love for Torah, then they will develop the learning of Torah. Our goal is to develop the attitude. They have to make the choice to invest the time and energy to develop the knowledge. But we as parents, we send them to a good school, but when we take time, when we sit with our children on Shabbos to learn with them, we have to ensure they don't look at it as ha'avodah zot, boy, this hard work. Sometimes children don't like the minyan parents davenet. We have to be considerate of that because we have to develop their love of tefillah and Torah and mitzvos. So Pharaoh comes out in his pajamas in the middle of the night. Very strange. Why was he lying in bed? You'll notice that Moshe tells him approximately at midnight. Why did he say approximately? Moshe knew it would be midnight. Yeah, but maybe the Egyptians' clocks are off. And if it happens a minute after midnight on their clock, they're going to come out and say, you see, it wasn't the hand of God. You see? You see, that's you think it's funny, but that's how people are. Sure, they had clocks. The Egyptians were big into gauging times. There are many ways to gauge time. There's a sundial, and then there are other ways to gauge clocks. We're talking about midnight. I know. When you learn astronomy, you'll see that there are many ways to gauge it. And if you think about it as the greatest night of the Egyptian year, where they believed that in the zodiac, this was the most powerful minute for the Egyptian god, so then in the Egyptian culture, this was a very important minute, that minute of midnight, and they were all watching for it. Now, they're told, on this minute, you're going to lose everything. Everything's going to go bad on you. So, Pharaoh comes running. He's a firstborn, and he's not sure. He's lost his firstborn son. He's not sure if he's next. And he comes running, and he goes into the Jewish quarter, and he asks, where does Moshe live? And the Jews peek out of the window, and they say, we can't come out and show you. Where God told us not to leave the house. Look at the Jews. Hashem said, Pharaoh says. Now they're looking Pharaoh in the eye and saying, I can't help you. So the Jews tell him, just go down that street. He goes down that street. They tell him, go back up that street. So he's given wrong direction. He goes up and down, the whole Jewish neighbor calling out, where's Moshe? Where's Moshe? What a message. All the Jewish children are now seeing that Pharaoh, which we always thought was so great. Look at him. He's coming out in his pajamas in the middle of the night. He himself is looking for Moshe. And the Jews don't leave. Moshe warned them, you do not leave at night. We will not run out like runaway slaves. We will go out when everyone knows we have the license of Pharaoh to leave. And so when the time comes and Moshe gives word, they're ready to leave. And the Jews leave Egypt. We have 600,000 men. You have to assume there were approximately another 600,000 women and approximately between 600,000 and 800,000 children. So we're numbering about 2 million. It's been 430 years since Hashem told us we would go down to Egypt. 400 years since Yitzchak was born. The year is 2448. And Yitzchak was born in the year 2048. So it's the middle of the day, and we leave Egypt. Hashem gives us a mitzvah. When you do this in the future, only Jews meet from the Paschal offering. And if you have a servant, he has to be circumcised before he can eat it. When you eat the Paschal offering, you have to know in advance who's eating. And we have a phenomenal mitzvah that converts are treated like citizens. We haven't yet received the Torah. And the Torah says equal treatment to converts. You have one of the first mitzvos in the Torah. We're still in Egypt. And Hashem tells us we are accepting people. If people want to join, they are accepted and treated as equals. And the parasha concludes with the mitzvah to sanctify the firstborn children and the firstborn animals. Remember, we said really the firstborn of the Jews deserve to be hit just like the Egyptians. Hashem gives us this mitzvah. This parsha of Kadesh Liko Bechor is in our tefillin. We will try to have a trip to a tefillin factory maybe this Thursday. We'll see if they have time for us. And we wear it as a sign on our arms and on the sign on our head. When we wear tefillin, we're supposed to remember that Hashem took us out of Egypt. That's the message of the tefillin. A person should stop as he puts on tefillin, and after he puts on tefillin, he should say, I'm putting on tefillin to fulfill the mitzvah of Hashem, to wear tefillin so I remember that Hashem took me out of Egypt with an outstretched arm and so that and a powerful hand, yeah? And so that I ensure that my thoughts and my actions are in line with the will of Hashem. So those are the thoughts we're supposed to have when we wear tefillin. Okay, we are out of time. We will pick up Ezrat Hashem Thursday night.